Hey there, my name is Hudson Phillips, and you're listening to Script Blast, a podcast to help you write better screenplays and write a better life. I'm a screenwriter and producer from Atlanta, Georgia, and as I seek out wisdom from my fellow screenwriters and indie filmmakers, I thought I'd share some of that wisdom with you. Today I talk with Walker Whited. Walker is a writer, director, editor, multi-hyphenate, all-encompassing indie filmmaker. He runs his own post house called W3. He also works as a drone op on shows like Ozark, The Gifted, and Dr. Sleep. I talked to Walker about his debut feature film, the contained thriller By Night's End. We talk about how he got started in film, some of the practical ways he brought By Night's End to life so quickly and effectively, and how he turned his envy into something beautiful. One of the reasons I do these interviews is so that you guys realize that it is possible to make your own feature film with very limited resources. I did it. Walker did it. A lot of these indie filmmakers we're talking to did it. All it takes is a tenacious drive, surrounding yourself with the right people, and not giving up. Before we get started, just a quick reminder about our brand new and absolutely free online workshop, Blast Off, that gives you a step-by-step guide to making your screenwriting career a reality. Learn how to recognize where you are on the journey and figure out the next steps to get where you want to be. You can sign up for free at scriptblast.com. Here's my chat with Walker. Walker, how you doing, man?
Good. Thanks for chatting with me, Hudson.
Totally. I'm excited about this. So I just had the pleasure of watching this is your first feature film, right? By Night's End?
Yeah, first one.
So we are in the middle of our coronavirus COVID-19 shutdown right now. So you did a digital kind of premiere for like casting crew, friends and family, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, I've been wanting to show it to everyone for a while, but before the virus and the pandemic happened, it was just, you know, money and trying to get find the right theater and whatnot was an issue. And then we didn't want to just invite everyone into a basement because of quality issues. You know, we wanted to be able to quality control it. And once the pandemic happened, it was like, well, let's just stream it online and who cares about the quality, you know, at least we get to show everyone. Unfortunately, YouTube did, you know, it suffered the quality, but at least people were able to see it.
And people were able to interact while watching and stuff, which was really cool to experience from my point of view, because I hadn't seen any of the film. I'd seen the trailers you'd posted and stuff, and knew some of your crew and stuff. So it was really cool to just see the energy around your cast and crew and how much they loved the film and loved the experience of making the film, even more importantly. So I want to get into a lot of that. But first, let's kind of go back, because this is cool, because we follow each other on social media and we've met a couple times, but I actually don't know all that much about you. I know you're kind of a multi-hyphenate writer, director, editor, that we first met at your dad's screenwriting class. So I'm curious, did you grow up around film, in and around all that?
No, I've been wondering this the whole time. Why? So he's been an English professor all my life. You know, he's taught Shakespearean classes and this, that, and the other, you know,
gotcha.
Smartest person I've ever known, but he doesn't like watching movies. They stress him out. So I don't know why he was teaching a script writing class. Like, he learned script writing from books and all that before he taught the class. So I don't really know where all that came from. But obviously he's so smart that he can like pick it up like that, you know.
I don't know
why he hasn't written a book. He should be a screenwriter. If I could get him to write a script with me, I think that would be insane.
That's funny. So he was a English guy writer, and then you're the one that kind of fell in love with film then.
Yeah, exactly. So I grew up on like James Bond movies and Indiana Jones movies and I just loved, you know, the action and the characters So I got into movies pretty early based on, you know, action-y kind of fun movies, adventure movies. No one else in the family really, no one's in the business. No one was really that into movies. You know, I'd make stupid little music videos and little things when I was a kid and in middle school and stuff. And then in middle school, we made a music video for this like video class we had. And I think that was like the first point where I was like, oh, this is really cool. We made something cool. It was the best project in the class. I'd like to keep trying to learn how to do this. So, you know, in high school, it was working for an airsoft store where we did all their online videos. And we kind of like did these, like, I don't know if you ever watched Top Gear, but We did kind of Top Gear type reviews for airsoft guns for them, and people really loved those. And so it was just kind of, you know, continuing down that path of like figuring out how to get to the bigger thing, which moved me into editing. I was a PA on a movie, and it was a really indie movie. I mean, like, you know, we all know the beginnings of making a movie, right, and they didn't have an editor. And I was like, hey, I've done a lot of editing on smaller things. I'd like to do a feature. I got to know the director really well. Ended up being the editor on that. And,
so what came first for you? It was, you loved movies, but your way in was doing these kind of like short projects where you're, I mean, when you do those things, you do everything, right? So you're testing out your editing skills, your directing skills, your writing skills, all that kind of stuff. Was there any one piece of that that's like, oh, this is what I want to do? Or is it all encompassing for you?
I think it was editing mostly, because I realized like it just made sense in my head. Like I understood beats and I understood pacing and I understood how to feel things out. And with a lot of the early projects, like writing wasn't, I mean, it was a deal. It was a big deal, but it wasn't a big thing. I'm thinking about like the airsoft videos. You know, we'd have to write a script about the airsoft gun,
right?
And then we'd include little funny jokes throughout it. But it was kind of like making it up as we went. So like the editing was really where we sat down, and it was like, okay, this is, you know, we had to bake a pie now, and we had to follow instructions or whatever. You know, this is where more of the skill, I guess, in my mind, came into. So I think editing was kind of that first thing.
Gotcha. So a lot of your education, it seems like, was making stuff. Did you go to school for film or anything like that?
Yeah, I went to Georgia State for film, and I always discredit it because it was a waste of time.
So you learned a lot more, you would say, just making stuff.
School of YouTube. Yep. Making stuff and watching videos. And
because this is a writing podcast, we talk about writing, and I'm a big believer that writers need to be making stuff. And I imagine that's kind of how you came up and you kind of learned. And it seems like maybe even you learned to write by actually making stuff, because there's such a difference of writing something on a page and then seeing it come alive and seeing how collaboration influences it. Is that something that you really recommend to writers, that they actually, hey, you got to get out and be doing stuff?
Oh yeah. So that script writing class you're talking about with my dad, that was like my main point when I went and talked to them. I went and talked with, I don't know if you know, producer Jason Wynn. I went and talked to his class over at, in North Georgia, I think. That's pretty much what I always tell them, is like, look, no matter what you want to do, you have to go do it. Especially if you want to be a writer, you can't just sit and write. Like, you have to know the producing side of things too. You have to know what works and what doesn't work. You have to know, it sucks, but you kind of have to understand like the money side of things a little bit, at least when you're writing, you know, so you know what to cut back on. And the only way you're going to be able to do all that is if you go out and understand a little bit of how it's done. So, you know, just write something, I don't care what it is, and go shoot it. We shoot these little 1 minute things every now and then just to test things out. And I mean, do that, you know?
So that kind of brings us to By Night's End, which I want you to pitch it and all that, but this is very much like, your story is very similar to mine, where you wrote something with the intention to shoot it yourself with very little money. And so it's a very self-contained film, and it's really amazing what you guys were able to pull off with it, but give us the quick pitch on it.
Okay. Yeah. So, it's about a couple that wake up in the middle of the night, and there's a guy rummaging around in their crawl space. And, the wife of the couple is ex-military, so she has guns in the house, and she confronts the guy. And he says, look, if you let me go, I'll give you $10,000. And he pulls a gun, and they have to put him down, you know, self-defense. But the husband says, what if we just look around the house for like an hour? We just take 1 hour, we check it out, we see if there's any money, and then we can call the police. So they do that, and it kind of evolves into this long night of playing cat and mouse with this other guy who shows up looking for what's in the house.
Yeah. And it's such a brilliant idea to me, because I think when you first pitched it to me, that's just how many times, every time you move into a house or move into a new apartment, you fantasize about, oh, what if I found, you know, a $10,000 stashed in the wall or something, right? Like, that's something so core to us. And also the idea of, you know, kind of the intruder things, like both of these things are just so, base and so like in our core, it's something that we always think about. Where did this idea come from? Where did it start?
I guess it was kind of a long process of 2018. I wanted to make a movie, and our producer Ryan said, look, let's make a movie for under $50,000. What can we do? I want to make it a horror movie. I don't really like horror movies, but we came up with an idea and I wrote one, and now I like horror movies because I wrote one and respect them now.
Yeah.
But that kind of fell through, and it was also kind of horror thriller. And of course, as you know, when we write, we tend to blow things up a little bit.
Right. And yeah, absolutely.
Get out of proportion. So then late 2018, I was camera operating a movie for BET, and I don't know, one night it was weird. I got home and I was laying in bed, and I was just, you know, it was one of those things where you're on set and you're like, they're doing this, why aren't I?
Right. Yeah.
And I was in bed and it was like middle of the night, and I don't know, I just thought, what if someone's in the crawl space right now? And I don't know, it all just started like clicking, and I literally got up and wrote basically all the beats down, probably like 80% of them, and then went back to sleep. And over the next 2 or 3 weeks, lunch breaks on set, and you know, after set, I would just write. And yeah,
that's amazing. That could so easily be one of those scenarios where you're like, oh, that's a great idea, maybe I'll remember it in the morning. But the right. fact that you got up and wrote it down, I think is
really. I have the worst memory, so I have to write it down. Yeah. So I like force myself to get up and write things down.
That's great. So how many ideas? So you're actually fishing for an idea that you can shoot cheaply. And this one's brilliant because it's mostly two or three people in one house over one night. And you guys really did it flawlessly. Do ideas come to you easily? Is this, or is this like one in a million? You mentioned already doing the horror film. Was this one of like five ideas that you're like, which one should we do? Or how did you flesh out those ideas?
I don't think ideas come to me easily, because I don't, you know, I might come up with something and then I tend to not like it, because I'll immediately be like, that would be a cool movie, and then I realize, no, that's just a moment, that's not a movie.
Right.
Scrap that. But I'll write it down still as a moment that could play out in a movie. This movie was the first idea that I had, because when I wrote it, or when I wrote down the beats originally, I wasn't thinking, oh, this could be done cheaply. I was just thinking this would be a good idea. And then I think it was a few days later, I thought, oh, we could shoot this in my house where I came up with the idea. I'm pretty sure the actors would come on board. I'm pretty sure the cinematographer would come on board. And I was standing in Jason Wynn's driveway, actually, when this all came up. I think I was picking up equipment or dropping off equipment at his house. And he was like, I want to go out in the woods and shoot something just with friends, you know, some monster movie. And I was like, oh, wait, that movie I wrote down the other day that I'm fleshing out, we could do that for nothing. So I think that was when it sparked, and I realized we can do this for basically nothing. Yeah. And literally leaving his house, I called up Philip, the DP, and Sean, producer, and my story, you know, he helped me develop the story. Ryan, the producer, was like, hey, I want to do this, can we do it? And everyone was like, yeah, let's do it. So
it was its
own idea, and I didn't, you know, I wasn't like fishing for ideas that we could do for nothing. So.
Right. Yeah. There's two things that you mentioned there that I think are really important, which is this idea of momentum behind an idea. A lot of people ask, you know, what, I have a million ideas, which one should I write? And generally my answer is, well, write the one that you're most passionate about and the one that has the most momentum, right? You kind of follow the momentum. And in your case, the fact that you got up and you were able to beat out, you know, 80% of the kind of beats of the thing, that it just happened, right? It just clicked. Like, you could immediately see it. Like, that's momentum. And then the second thing you said was that you reached out to your collaborators and they were all immediately on board, and that builds momentum, right? Like, there is this kind of forward movement that's required to take an idea to completion. And I really do think, and that's the other reason why I think creating things is so important, is because you have those collaborators, and collaborators act as those momentum builders. They act as kind of, when you get stuck, they keep you going. They're accountability partners, right? That you're all like moving and creating something together. There's something that really magical that happens there that doesn't happen when you're by yourself in a room, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, I always say the best part of directing, and you know, it's also the writing is the collaboration, because I mean, you can't do everything yourself. So,
yeah.
And you know, ideas come from collaboration, and nothing is worse to me than someone, this is dumb probably, but I'm not vain at all. Yeah. So I don't like the credit a film by, and I don't like people who are like, my movie, blah, blah. And I've kind of gotten to the point where I realize I have to call it my movie to like get points across and like talk to distributors and all. But I always like, I'm very inclusive because I realized that there were so many people involved.
No, I completely agree. And we tried to have the same mindset as well on set. And part of that was because, I mean, I think you had made a whole lot more stuff by the time you made your film than we did. And so part of it was not really being humble. It was just being, we don't really know what we're doing, and we're surrounded by these people that do. And we just really recognized that how much, every little piece makes a massive difference. Like you can really see the pieces that are missing, and you can really see the pieces that were elevated. So, all right. So you've got you woke up in the middle of the night, you write down all these ideas. How did you get from that idea section to a finished script ready to be filmed?
That's a good question. I think I block a lot of things out once it's done. But I think what happened was I remember writing during set, you know, while I was working on a set and writing afterwards and just trying to keep the momentum going and get it all down on paper. After I had a first draft, it was, hey, everyone read this, give me notes, and let's start pulling stuff out that doesn't work. But that happened even all the way up to production.
Right.
And then, of course, through editing, pulling things out that ended up not being necessary.
So talk a little bit about, I love the fact that you're just like, hey, I'm on set and I'm writing in the extra moments that I have, that it doesn't require, you know, a full day to sit down and knock it out. What's kind of your process? How do you get into flow quickly and, you know, just kind of write on demand like that?
Writing on demand for that was because I was on a set of a movie that I wasn't a fan of, and was kind of annoyed that it was being made for how much money it was being made. So I think it was just kind of, I don't know if this is bad to say, but I think it was kind of out of
spite,
maybe it was spite or envy. I'm not sure which. Yeah, yeah. Just like I need to get this down because I want to do this. And that's not to say that By Night's End is the best movie ever or better than that movie. It's just to say that I wanted to be doing what they were doing and trying to, and be able to get the chance to try and do it a little better or with a little more, intonation, I guess, if that makes sense. So,
a lot of people, write their first feature. I know this was not your first, but, with the intention of shooting it. And there's so many roadblocks to getting a movie made. And so I wanted to talk through a couple of those with you and just see how you overcame them. I think for one is our own mental roadblocks, right? Of, do I deserve to make this film? Can I make this film? The way we view ourselves, the way we view the quality of our writing. How do you deal with some of those internal voices at all? And if so, how do you deal with them?
Yeah. There's a script I have right now that it comes in and out of, I want to do this next. I don't want to do this next. I want to do it. And it's because I wrote it, and I like the idea, but there's something about it that I think doesn't sit right with me, and I don't know what it is. Is it, it's kind of actiony and thrillery, but I think I watch too many bad movies to learn, you know, like, you know, those like typical actiony B, C movies that you'll see everywhere with the same actors. I watch a bunch of those just to like see what they're doing. And I think I end up equating those into my own thing, even though like, I don't think the script is the same at all.
Right.
I just kind of see it. What if it ended up being like those?
right.
So, yeah, that's one of those scripts where it's just, do I do it? Do I not? And it's pressure on myself on like, is the writing good enough? Is it what I think it is? You know?
Yeah.
And then I have another script that I really want to do next that I didn't write. Someone else wrote. And, you know, we're still kind of tweaking it, and there's some things I want to do to it, but I think it's fantastic. And I think that's awesome that someone else wrote it and I don't have to like put myself down about it because I didn't write it, you know?
Right.
So, and that's the first script that I picked up that someone else wrote that I want to make. So it's kind of been that new adventure of, I didn't write this and it's really good in my opinion. It's a whole different feeling. And I don't know. I really like that. Even though I love writing, I love this other feeling of not having to worry about my writing.
No, I think that, that's a really interesting mindset of how we view our own work versus how we view other people's work mm-hmm. and how hard it is to view our own work with an outside point of view. Right.
So hard.
But I think a big part of that is what you mentioned of like, hey, sending it to your collaborators, getting notes. And, so how long was that process for you guys of writing that first draft, of getting the notes? How long between that kind of first idea and then being on set shooting?
So when I started the idea, it was October 2018, and we started shooting late February of 2019. So it was very short.
Wow.
But it was just kind of, we probably could have taken longer on script notes and things like that, but it was just one of those things of like, look, I know we can do this. Let's do it. And let's see what it's like and let's experience it. And the season was right. I really wanted to shoot it in the winter or whatever, into winter. So it was really short.
Yeah. I think, that's very similar to how we got, our film going as well. And I do think there's something really key about that of just, hey, let's set a date. Let's do it. Because if you wait for the right moment to do something, it will never, ever come, right? Like you have to kind of jump in before you're ready, which is kind of like that's true of the entire industry, right? I mean, like we're all just kind of jumping in before we're ready. But I think that goes back to that mental thing too. So often we're like, do we deserve this? Are we ready for this? Do I have enough education? Do I have enough skill? And the truth is, no, you don't, but you never will. Right. It is just about doing and making, and skill comes from the doing and making.
Right. Yeah. I see it a lot where there's, I think people out there trying to do it for the wrong reasons. Mm. You know, they're like us, we want to do it. We have that need to do it. So we're going to do it to learn to do it better the next time.
Yeah.
And that's what we keep saying on this film. Like if this part doesn't work, or if this little thing didn't work, well, what did we learn to make it better next time? Which, you know, we learned a bajillion things, as I'm sure you guys did, on how to do things, you know, differently next time.
But right.
There's so many people out there that I think are just trying to do things for, you know, is it money or fame or whatever? And I see it all the time, but they're not taking the time to learn.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the biggest issue. I mean, even the biggest directors and cinematographers and editors and writers in the world are learning every single time they do a new project.
Right. So. Yeah, absolutely. So one of the big hurdles for writers making their own films, is funding, right? Mm-hmm. Which a big part of that is that you intentionally wrote something to be made for as cheaply as possible, but that many people on set for that many days is just an expensive thing no matter what you're doing. Right. So what are, I'd love to hear just kind of how you guys got your funding, and then, kind of B, what tips do you have for keeping costs low in what you're writing?
Yeah. Funding, I have learned, will never be there.
Right.
You know, I mean, it doesn't matter who you know that's rich, they're going to poo-poo your idea, and they're not going to be interested in it, and they're going to be worried about investment, because that's what they do. They're business people. They're worried about investment, and films are bad investments, as we know.
Right, yeah.
I was tired of like waiting to figure out how to get the money and where the money will come from. So this idea, you know, I thought we could do for like $50,000 or $15,000.
Yeah.
That was stupid. it turned into, people don't want me to say this, but it turned into under 30K.
Uh-huh.
But which was fine, because we had the collaborators, the producers and whatever came together and just kind of put the money forward. And we found one other guy who came in as an exec and put some money forward as
That's
well,
awesome.
who we had done some projects with and was an actor. And
so
it was the people around us again.
Yeah. And people have to understand is when you mention, you know, a film under 50,000, really you are working with talent that's worth way more than that. Mm-hmm. They're just not getting paid what they're worth. Right. So really, if you look at it as if they were being paid as if it's a normal film, you're well into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Yeah.
We went the Blumhouse method, which I'm sure you know their method, which is, you know, everyone gets points, I guess, in their method. Right, no one gets paid. It's all deferred, essentially, you know, because they do a movie for $1 million and then it makes, you know, $300 million. Obviously, sure, they can pay them back. you know, that's not going to happen for us because we don't have names and we don't have the Blumhouse audience, of course. Yeah. But we did that where it was, hey, guys, you know, we've all worked together. We all want to work together. Will you agree to come in for, we only shot for 12 days on deferred pay? Once it's sold, we will agree to pay you back. Everyone signed contracts. And then the actors, since it was a SAG project, because the actors, you know, we don't have a big name. And, you know, I feel bad saying that about them, but they know that. And that has been our downfall during this, like, selling time and distribution time.
Yeah.
Everyone's upset that we don't have a big name, which sucks. But I knew that would be a hurdle. And I still wanted to go forward. But I knew the actors that I was bringing in, I've worked with before. Michelle, our lead, who plays Heather. I had a movie 2 or 3 years ago I started to try and make, which did not work. Uh-huh. But she was the supporting cast in that movie. Kurt, I had done a PSA for Vote Georgia film a few years ago, and he played a news anchor on a thing I directed, and he was awesome.
Yeah.
And Michael Milligan, I've known for a very long time and have done a few things with him. And, you know, he went on to do 3 Billboards. He was in, you know, he was in Ozark. He was in The Gifted. You know, he's done a lot of TV and movies.
Yeah.
Same with Kurt, tons of TV movies. But I had already known them and kind of cultivated somewhat of a relationship with them. So I just went to him and said, hey, I'm trying to do this thing. I don't know how much money there is. You know, we're following SAG rules and you will get whatever, you know. I didn't do all the SAG paperwork, but they got some kind of pay according to the rules. It's not much, but it's a movie. Would you be down? And, you know, all lead roles, and everyone agreed to it. So,
yeah, that's amazing. That's one thing I love about, we're both in Atlanta, and, Atlanta's really booming with acting talent. Of people who are just in stuff all the time, and they're all so talented and so cool to work with. And then you take your film out to LA and to these people who are trying to buy these films, and like none of that matters. Like they don't care unless it's, you know, one of a handful of names. It's a very frustrating process.
It's very frustrating. I mean, you know, we cultivated this. I cultivated this movie in the thought of one location. There's only going to be 3 actors. You know, there's a few more actors, but 3 main actors who are on screen for 90% of the time. A semi-big oneer, it's not really that big, oneer to open the movie, and there's going to be a big 3-minute oneer in the middle of the movie. You know, so I had these things that I cultivated thinking, oh, cool, you know, one location, 3 actors, people will get involved and love that. But that wasn't the case. They just want to see Brad Pitt in the movie.
And it is a fantastic movie and it's gorgeously shot. How much of that was on the page? Like, do you wear a directing brain while you're writing, or are those two separate for you?
If I want to write it, I will. And I'll put some direction in the script, but generally try not to put the direction in the script, because obviously we shouldn't do that in case, you know, we sell it and someone else doesn't.
Sure.
But, I think for this one, there was a little bit of direction, but it was mostly just chats between me and Philip. But the look really came from, since I live in the house, there was this sodium vapor street light outside that would cast orange on the windows. It was just sitting in the house going, oh, that's a cool look. That's a cool look. How can we implement it? So that light really kind of dictated the mood of the whole movie. Yeah. Funny enough, about a month ago, they changed the light to a LED light. So it's no longer there.
That's funny. It'd be a very different look for your film.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, on set, were there any writing challenges, or do you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you're still rewriting as you're going?
Yeah, there was the pivotal scene in the movie, if you remember, was when they find the radio on the guy that they kill in the beginning. And then that's when they find out there's someone outside waiting on this guy, listening, whatever. The scene was not working at all on set.
Gotcha.
And It was because I had originally written it as like this thrillery idea of where the guy somehow, he can't see in the house, but for some reason when they turn the radio on, he knows it's on and can be like, hey, I'm watching you, whatever, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But as we were doing, I was like, that doesn't make any sense. You can't see in the house. How would that work? So at lunch I was like, this doesn't work. The scene isn't working. And if the scene doesn't work, you know, we're screwed. So yeah. I went out and got lunch, sat in the yard and rewrote it. And what you see on screen now is they turn on the radio and he's just yelling and being crazy.
Yeah, it's great.
And it works so much better for his character. And I think really helped make the scene. And you know, we came back from lunch, we reshot, and I was like, oh, okay, now it works. That feels much better. So
that's awesome. What about in editing? Because I know we recognize just so many things. Like, I was amazed how much writing you can actually do during the editing process. And since you have an editing background, I'd love to hear kind of your editing process on this and how much you were wearing that writer's hat in editing as well. Yeah.
Still definitely was. We cut the whole movie together. And it's a short movie. It's only an hour and 25 minutes. And probably full length, that's like an hour 32 or something. So, you know, there wasn't a lot we could cut, but we did cut what we thought we needed to. Uh-huh. There was a scene that a few people on the team thought wasn't practical to being a parent, and I am not a parent, but I thought the scene made sense. And they said we should cut it. We cut it for a while. It was gone, and then I thought it was not right without it, so I put it back in. And then there's a scene where they're on the back porch kind of arguing about what's going on, and we kind of realize that they're kind of reiterating a lot of what we already know, so what's the point of it? But we couldn't cut the whole scene because when they go outside, they realize we haven't looked in the shed out back, we need to go back there. That whole scene we made up in the edit. So we stripped everything out, and we had a few shots of them looking at each other. And then we dropped in some ADR when we're not on the character of, of what's happening. And then we went to the shed. So even that, it was, okay, we need to write some ADR and we need to rework the scene or rewrite it so that it still fits the narrative and moves us along.
I love stories like that. Cause it's the magic of movies, what you're able to do. It's always amazing to me.
There's my favorite scene in the movie. They're just sitting in the hallway together, and it's finally kind of the moment where they're coming together and we realize they're not as broken of a couple as we thought they were. On page, the scene takes place where Kurt is like changing and taking off a bloody shirt and putting on a new one. And Michelle stops and looks at him, and you kind of see that spark of like, oh, she still like looks at him like, a, you know, in a marital way.
Right, yeah.
But we had some continuity issues. So on the day we had to rework that scene and, you know, we didn't have the blood and the shirt or something. I don't remember what it was, but the shirt had already been changed in another scene for whatever reason. So like, oh crap, how do we redo the scene? Cause I need that beat. That beat is what gets us to the third act.
Yeah.
And, it changed to, oh, we could strip all dialogue and let's just have them be together in this hallway on the floor. And it's my favorite scene in the movie. And it just came together on the day.
That's awesome. So I want to talk about, because you said you grew up on these action movies, and that's, I'm assuming that's what you really want to do. But that's also the hardest to do on a small budget. And I was actually, that's one of the things I was most amazed with. I mean, it's a great kind of tension filled film, but in your kind of third act, without spoiling things, it gets pretty action-y. And it's really, really well done. So I'd be curious of where do you find this middle line between these large ambitions and, well, lack of money is really what it is all about. Is that still like, have you fallen in love with the small, or is your goal still to make big giant films?
I still want to blow stuff up, but, no, on this, you know, John Wick had come out and Atomic Blonde and all those. So it was like, how can we do fight scenes that, you know, I guess a long time ago, we loved cutty action scenes, but you know, now it's like, we realize, okay, we need to see things happen and we need to slow it down. How can I do that to test myself? Keith, our stunt coordinator, has done Marvel movies and, you know, stunts and biggest movies you've ever heard of. So he came in and kind of helped develop the scene, the fight scenes. And Michelle was a stunt double, or, you know, she's done stunts in Zombieland and tons of movies, you know. So she had already had fighting background. So literally I just said, guys, I want to come up with the scene, this fight scene, but I want to do it as in very small shots. I said, here's one shot, here's one shot, here's another shot. You know, I kind of walked them through the shots, and then they developed the fight. And then the crawl space fight, it was kind of the same thing. I was like, I want to do a fight in this 4 foot tall crawl space. And everyone went, what? How are we going to do that? And I said, exactly. It's going to be awesome. When have you seen that before? Yeah. And they went out in the yard and developed a fight scene where they can like lay down and kind of fight. So yeah, it was kind of about setting and restriction.
Yeah.
Less cameras and less movement. And stuck in a small space, how can we make this really interesting and still fit the narrative? Because, you know, I don't think it's a spoiler. You can see it in the trailers that Michelle is bloody. You know, she's not invincible, you know.
Sure.
She's just because she was in the military, she's fighting for her life, but she's not like the best fighter in the world. So I wanted it to make sense for story. And they pulled off some cool stuff.
Well, that's what I love about that is just that line of thinking. All right, we can't have a horse riding through New York City, right? But what you can do is come up with a really clever thing that you haven't seen before, a fight in a crawl space where you can't even stand up, right? I mean, like, it was such a cool scene and really well done. And it's what makes your movie stand out, right? It's what gives it a personality and what makes it compete with the bigger thing is because you're doing things that they would never do because they don't have those restrictions. And I'm a big believer in, I think that's what makes low budget film so fascinating and so interesting is restrictions really push creativity.
Yeah. I would love to get to the point where I don't have to have the restriction to see what that's like, obviously.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I feel like, I mean, we've heard this a million times from some of the biggest directors in the world that restrictions and less money makes them work harder and think harder.
Right.
But I would love to know what that difference is actually like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I have a feeling that you, no matter how much money you have and no matter how many people you have, there are always some restrictions, right?
Sure. No. Studios telling you what to do.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, let's, I always wrap this up with the same five questions. So I'm going to do, these five questions really quickly. First is, what do you write?
I write fun and engaging content.
Awesome. Which are you like sitting on like some really awesome like big budget action adventure things that you really want to do?
Yeah, I've got a lot of scripts that are kind of various completion rates or whatever.
Yeah.
The first script I ever wrote, I started when I was senior in high school, and weirdly enough, I still really like it.
Huh.
But I had been writing it for like 5 years. I want to go back through it, but it's like a $30 million thing. It's like war in Atlanta and the Federal Reserves are under attack and it's nuts.
That's awesome. And is that something, are you curious in writing something that you would sell or you only want to write to make stuff yourself?
No, I would sell. There's a few scripts that I would sell. One of them I wrote one summer as like a blockbustery, like typical action, like, goofy comedy that, you know, Seth Rogen might do where it's just dick jokes and stupid stuff like that.
Right.
You know? And I wrote it as a point to, I wonder if I could sell this. And I pitched it to this company who was really interested in it, but they said it wasn't right for them at the time. So I was like, okay, I made my point that this is dumb and it's nothing I would ever make, but it is what sells. So I would sell that if, you know, one day.
Yeah. No, that's fine. All right, cool. What's your most, what's your proudest accomplishment?
Writing and making By Night's End so far.
How do you define success?
I think it's when you personally can feel like you're in a good place. You know, like I think once this movie sells, I'll be slightly more successful. And I think once I get to the next movie, I'll be slightly more successful. But I'm at the point now where I don't really know what success is because I'm so hard on myself about like what worked and what didn't work. So I'll go with after I've done the next movie is success.
That's great. What writers do you most look up to and why?
I'm really bad with names and actually remembering people.
I am too.
But I don't know who wrote Collateral, but whoever wrote that is very inspirational.
Yeah.
And I know in about 10 minutes when we're done with this, I'm going to think of about five names.
Is Collateral one of your go-tos? Like, oh, if I could have made any movie, it'd be that.
It's probably up there. Yeah. It's one of those movies where like everything works and the writing is so damn good.
It's pretty flawless.
I would say probably Joe Carnahan's writing. I really enjoy it. If you've seen The Gray.
Yeah.
I think The Gray is probably one of the best movies of the 21st century. you know, the Wolf movie. Really enjoy him. Shane Black, I think he wrote The Nice Guys, right? I put that down as my favorite movie of the
past. Yeah, no, I love that movie. I just rewatched it the other day too.
His writing is fantastic. I agree.
Last one. What advice would you give to your younger self?
Have patience and chill out.
Great.
I still need patience desperately, but.
It's not an industry that you can be impatient in.
Right. 21 year old you is not going to get the chance to make a movie.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Cool. So where can we find more info about you and By Night's End? How can we keep in touch to make sure we know when it comes out and all that?
Yeah, the Instagram for the website is, or for the movie, is By Night's End Movie. We're posting BTS and information on, you know, when it sells there. I'm on Instagram at Walker Whited. That's pretty much all I use is Instagram.
Cool. Great, dude. Well, thank you so much. This was great. And it was very inspirational. And I love hearing these stories of people who just get out and do it, and really push themselves and, do whatever it takes, you know? So, this was great.
Thank you for having me. I love chatting and realizing that I've probably been saying gibberish the whole time.
It was great, man. All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks again to Walker for opening up about his personal experiences making his film. If you're looking to take that next step in your screenwriting journey, I'd love for you to check out Blast Off, our free one-hour workshop to help you launch and accelerate your screenwriting career. Sign up at scriptblast.com. If you're really enjoying the podcast and looking for a place where you can find other like-minded screenwriters, check out our community Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/scriptblast, or you can reach out to me personally at hudson@scriptblast.com. We'll see you next time.